Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Mojan Sohi. Hi, Fred.
Hey, Mojan. Good talking to you again. I sent you over a paper. We were chatting a couple of weeks ago, and it was a article from the New Yorker magazine that came across my feed somewhere by Joshua Rothman, and it's called Why Paper Jams Persist, which caught my attention because I first got into electronics at Hewlett-Packard working on inkjet printers. And paper jams was blamed on the mechanical engineers, of course. Which blamed the software engineers, and they blamed the paper manufacturers, and then everybody blamed marketing, and I'll get into that in a minute. But we've been dealing with paper ever since the first semi-automated press existed, right? You know, it used to be just one hand stamp and a big screw kind of coming down on it, and then somebody figured out, well, let's put a mechanical thing in here so we switch papers. And I bet you the paper jammed in that. I don't have any evidence one way or the other, but even today, I have an inkjet printer, and every couple thousand sheets, a page jams. And there's lots of ways that happens, and lots of reasons why it happens, and all kinds of other stuff. But the article, what I got out of the gist of it was like, why? Why can't we engineer this out so that we don't have jams? And it seems like a reasonable question. I thought also in general, why do we, it's kind of job satisfaction for me or guarantees that there's always going to be some failures. So that we stay employed, figure it out. But but it sounded like they were working with what I think it was a Xerox team. And it sounded like it was a major technical laboratory or theoretical laboratory. They were going into the stuff that, I mean, who cares? But they were going into, what does the edge of the paper look like? What is the thicknesses? What is this? What is this? How's humidity? And they went into like 500 variables and all these ways to test it and organize it and everything else. And they said, yeah, jams still happen, even with your best of systems. but what did you take away from it, as you first shot at it?
Yeah, I think it's, for one, I love that they got into this, right? Like, I think we should be asking more questions like this, I think, of everyday items. And I think, like, there's probably many more examples, right, of similar, it's just household equipment that we have that do have something that is about them. And if we just kind of have accepted maybe in a way that's just how it is. Occasionally this, you know, thing that is not, it doesn't do what it's supposed to be doing. And I love that they asked the question of like, well, yeah, why is that? And then my other thought was, you know, I mean, when you think about it, it reminded me of how the more modern, if you will, like equivalent of this challenge in my head is getting robots to fold clothing, right? Like folding a non-rigid object in a particular way, I think is a pretty challenging thing to do. Right.
Like, and I gave up on that when I was 12.
You're just like, this is not necessary. What are we doing?
That's right. Buy clothes that don't wrinkle, just shove them in the drawer.
Right. Yes. Yeah. But I think it's fascinating, right? I think they're trying to get robots to do so many different things. And I think folding has, at least based on my knowledge of talking to controls engineers and roboticists, like, you know, and kinematicians, like, you know, folding non-rigid objects is a pretty tough challenge. And it kind of made me think about the, you know, you have this paper is also non-rigid. It has to go into this, mechanism and come out. it has to go through it at a particular rate. You have to be able to accept like multiple sizes of papers with different thicknesses, and you know they're going to be different. They're going to probably have different, you know, friction on surface roughness, basically.
Oh yeah, I think of glossy versus cloth-ish
exactly.
type ones.
Exactly,
that's a pretty broad spectrum when you think about it.
Yeah, exactly. So on the one hand, I'm like, yeah, like, you know, you kind of think about it like, yeah, why is that? Like, we put a man on the moon. Why are we still having paper jams? But on the other hand, well, it is a challenging problem.
Well, it is. It's in.
Yeah.
But it's not. If we had created the first printer way back when and mm-hmm. and it said this is the only paper that works with it. Right. And it's, you mm-hmm. know, a proprietary. This is the only paper that works with it. And I mean, mm-hmm. there's laser printer paper and there's inkjet printer paper. And then there's glossy versions and stuff and everything else. So I blame marketing mm-hmm. as they say, but people want to print on t-shirts. They want to print on this. They want to print on that. They want to do greeting cards. They want to do this and that. And like, okay. So if you don't like jams, this is the paper you use. And it's it, none others. And mm-hmm. I don't even think that would work.
That would not work, yeah.
No, but the not no, work no. because customers say, wait a mm-hmm. second, I want to print greeting cards. I want to print labels. I want to do this or that or the other thing. And I've talked about it in other show, other podcasts before, is that when we first get a technology, it's new and the early adopters get it and they, you know, use it and say, yeah, this is great or not. And then it gets adopted and goes into mass production and all the other happy stuff that happens. But it's new and novel, and you give it a lot of grace, going, oh, I don't need to hand type this thing. I can just print it. What mm-hmm. a deal. I don't need to go to some print shop someplace or, you know, go someplace that has the special equipment to print it. I can do this on demand at home. What a deal. And if it jams, it's inconvenient, but it's like getting a flat tire in your car. You don't stop driving because you might get a flat tire one time in 10 years. It's mm-hmm. it's the value of having it able to print most of the time is good enough. But the issue is that doesn't stay static. That use case and that mechanism and that quality of paper changes. And for all kinds of reasons, and I blame marketing mostly for that. But we're using printers in different places, yeah. We have different use patterns for it. People have used printers, like a home printer in an office, printing full color, glossy photos of open houses coming up kind of thing, flyers. Yeah. It was never intended to do that. It can, but it will jam. It will get hot. It will change dimensions. It will build up more dust than it knows how to deal with, and so on and so on. But the dynamic with almost every product is that as long as the value of what it does do far outweighs the inconvenience sides of stuff, we're going to deal with it one way or the other. And we're going to get creative as a population saying, oh, let's put this on a charter boat. Oh, let's put this on a space station. Oh, let's put this in a, you know, at high altitude, at low altitude, put it underground. It's, you know, put it on my tractor while I'm plowing the field and taking readings and stuff. It's, you know, printers that are portable printers. I'll take it in my briefcase and use it off my car's power, you know, kinds of stuff like that. Our ability to be creative and use stuff in ways the design team never, ever conceived of, that will continue, especially if it's useful to do. If getting mm-hmm. print while you're in your car is what you want to do and it's useful for you, and you can see, like an Uber driver or a taxi driver, they have a printer to give you a receipt if you want one. But, although mm-hmm. I don't know about Uber, I've never been in one. I think you get it on email or through the app.
You haven't been in an Uber?
Yeah.
How is this possible? have you been in a Waymo?
No, I'd like to, but I never have.
Okay.
It is complete sidetrack.
We can make that happen.
The idea is it's all another episode, but it's, I stopped traveling for business before the Waymo and Uber stuff were around very much.
Okay, fair enough.
So, not been a deal. I'm more of a limousine kind of guy, you know.
Oh,
Just
right.
kidding.
Of course. Yes,
Just
yes.
kidding.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
Yes, yes.
But these guys
Not
at
hanging out with
Xerox,
us mere peasants.
yeah. Let me go back to Xerox and safer ground over
Sorry.
there.
Yes. Okay.
Right. They were going into, you know, the detailed friction capabilities, how it the rollers impact it. They were using a conveyor belt with a suction, you know, a vacuum underneath it to hold the page down, but they realized and were measuring the difference in adhesion at the corners versus in the middle. And saying, you know, if the corner flips up a little bit, that's going to jam. If the middle flips up, that's another spot for jam. And they had 800 ways it could happen. And it's to me, it was they've got too much money and they're trying too hard. You know,
Well, I
it's
think it goes back to what you were saying, is what's the acceptable failure rate, right? Like at
yeah.
some point that I would think that at some point they had looked and decided that you know what? This is a good reliability.
It's
It's
good
good
enough.
enough.
Let's ship
It's
it.
good
Yeah.
enough and we ship it. Yeah, it's you know, we go. And I mean, in my experience of having been in taxis that did have, you know, printers for receipts, just to kind of use that as an anecdotal example. I don't, I mean, it probably only has happened to me like twice, which, you know, I mean, we're starting not with a very large sample size, anyways, but still, like, you know, very low failure rate. So I can understand how at some point they were like, you know, this is acceptable. But I can also, you know, of course, as an engineer, understand from the engineer's perspective to like sciencing this, right? That they want to get to the bottom of it. Like I love that they mentioned, you know, the Bernoulli principle in the article, and they
Yeah.
had simulations, and they thought about, you know, exactly like you said, the friction of the paper, and they even talked about how humidity changes the properties of the paper, and you have to take that into account.
Yeah, and then it changes as you put paper into a hot environment, say going into an active printer and it's cold paper.
Yeah. And
The
depending on
humidity changes the
what type
crust.
of tree the paper came from, you know, if it's like pine
Length of
or fir
fiber.
eucalyptus. Yeah, exactly.
It was
Yeah.
amazing.
Yeah.
They got all kinds
Yes.
of cool. And if they could
Yes.
solve it and, you know, and eliminate the problem, just think of all the levers and gadgets and software codes to say, oh, you have a paper jam. Turn lever A, open slot B, you know, reach your hand into this place you can't see that has lots of things that will just eat your hand and pull your paper out. And don't mind the
Yes.
ink all over your hand. You got the paper out, you know.
Yeah.
But
Yeah.
these machines all have all this extra engineering going into it. How do you open this? How do you examine this? How do you get access to these different places so that you can clear a jam relatively easy? Right?
Yeah.
If you didn't
Yeah.
have
Yeah.
access to it and it jams, you got to get a screwdriver out, and really, that's not going to be an everyday activity. I think the issues with that will go up. And think of the engineering tolerancing when this is on a hinge and has to open and close. When if it was just fixed, it wouldn't have that much variability. And so it's like we kind of accept
Yeah.
that it happens and we need to solve the problem, because when it happens and you can't clear it, then you have to go to the shop to clear it, for example, or have somebody professionally take it apart, reassemble it. That's a huge annoyance versus can I compromise and increase the chance of jams, but make it easy to clear. And at some point, and it's the same with many, many products, is if it's really difficult to put a piece of lead in your mechanical pencil, and that's the only way to refill it, and you don't, you know, you finally found a pencil you like, and now you can't refill it, I'm not going to buy that again. Whereas if they make it really simple to reload it, then it's not a big deal. You know, it's a consumable part of the product, and you do it.
It's a balance of what is like it kind of goes back to our previous topics a while back from of repairability, right? Like how easy is it to repair this thing? And to your point, if you can make it much easier to repair, maybe, you know, the user might be okay with a higher failure rate.
it's an engineering judgment. But to your point, also marketing, also
yeah,
cost, obviously.
And it's human psychology, is that.
Mm-hmm.
But the article was, why are we still dealing with this? It's been decades and decades and decades that we've had laser printers and inkjet printers and photocopiers, and all of these mechanisms are moving paper nearly identically. It's from a tray up through some stuff, get the positioning right, get the speed right, everything else, and then it prints. And it's like, yeah, that's a good question. But it extends to all kinds of things. Is it worth fixing it? If it costs us $1 million to get a printer that will never jam, I don't think anybody's going to buy it. Right? Now, years ago, I got called in to work with the team, and they were in Barcelona at the time, in Hewlett-Packard, and they had been making plotters. Some of them were 4 or 5 feet wide, huge large sheets of paper, and it was really, really good printing on it because of the mechanical and electric, all the drawings they're doing had to be precise and show up very well. And they were amazing, absolutely amazing. The mechanical precision they held on this long throw for this print head to go over to do all this stuff and get it all exactly the right height and the right dimensions and everything else, it was a miracle that it worked. And it just worked. And so that team was then tasked with, we want you to make a high-speed printer that's competitive while offset printing, which was the staple for making books and newspapers and everything else. It was a very fast system, but ancient. And the theory was that if you did it with an inkjet printer, you could print the address label on each cover of a magazine, for example, or you could customize each item printed for a particular person or reason or whatever. So if you wanted a bunch of books printed just to go to one conference, and then 2 weeks later you're going to be at a different conference, you could have it, thanks for attending such conference. And it's one print run, and you don't have to reset or redo all the type and reprogram it and everything else. You could just print, every item could be completely different, even though it's one run. And so the market thought, well, that's a cool idea. And you see it every now and then where it's obviously printed versus this label stuck on it. And the idea to this team was, we need to make it very, very reliable. And so they started running into paper jams. And I said, where's the paper jams happening? It was this kind of innocent question from this naive guy from California going, what? My jam? And they're going amazing speeds. And they said, unfortunately, it jams right at the spot where it causes the most damage ever. It's right under the print head. And when a piece of paper is moving this fast, it just tears up the print head. And now you got to replace the heads, which are the most expensive component in the printer. And
wow.
And it just wreaks havoc for their uptime and throughput and everything else. I said, well, why is it jammed there? Says, that's when we're finally getting it aligned just right to be under the printer. I said, how about you move it up 2 feet, get it aligned there. If it's going to jam, it jams there where it doesn't hurt anything. And then make it very easy to replace that piece, pull that jam out. Mm-hmm. And they all looked at me like I had two heads or something. It's like, we can do that? Yeah. This thing's the size of the room.
Put it over there. And sometimes when you're working on something and your head's down, you just kind of don't, zoom out to think about what else is possible.
That's right. And part of it also is they had worked for decades on making things that were very reliable, not repairable, reliable. And now they got the system where, yeah, it's going to jam. They're moving so many pieces of paper through it. Instead of one per hour, it was something like 1,000 a minute or something like that. It was incredibly fast. So they were not used to this idea of, turn lever A, open hatch B and stuff like that, pull the paper out, reset, push the button, go again. That was not part of their design psyche. And but it goes back to that. We mentioned paper has all this variability, and there's different marketing needs for different, totally different types of paper and cardstock to t-shirts and everything in between. The variability is what gets us. That's why we have failures. It's not that we can't design it to not fail. Eventually it'll fail. You know, everything's going to fail eventually. Yeah. Yet if we're making a printer for 5 years and you only use this one kind of paper and only in this humidity and all these other criteria, yeah, you can probably make it so it doesn't jam, but nobody cares.
And to your point, I think yeah, exactly. I think they, yeah, exactly. Is that it's that balance of like, yeah, is it worth going to look at it and to consider the different options? And are they even, you know, kind of thinking about it? I think is, you know, it got to a point where probably it was like good enough. It would be great to talk to someone that worked at Xerox at the time, you know, like I think that whole facility, I think at the time was working on so many fascinating things. And I've read like previous articles about just that time at Xerox, and yeah, like there was just so many inventions. So
yeah, and then they gave half of them away, and other people made billions of money, lots of money off of it.
Yes, yes.
Their marketing, yes. They said, "Oh, nobody will with films forever. That's just never going to happen." And they invented the digital camera.
Yes,
in that time.
They did.
So it goes. There's a whole other book written about that somewhere. But so anyway, it's. If you're working on trying to solve a problem that is persistent and it's a nuisance, maybe, why? You know, why is that the focus versus other things? And I'm quite sure there are reasons for some, and there might be marketing reasons, a major customer, whatever. But if you've got if you're listening to this and you're working on a problem to, you know, reduce a failure rate, is that really the right thing to do? Is that clear? And I'd be interested to know what kind of factors go into that decision. What do you guys consider? So let us know. Head over to sendoreliability.com/go/SOR. And you can find a couple of ways to get in touch with us. Jean and I and the other hosts of the show are available through LinkedIn and our About pages. And that paper was Why Paper Jams Persist by Joshua Rothman, out of the New Yorker magazine. And I don't have the data on the printout I have, but you should be able to find it anyway. I don't know. Luckily, our Zoom connection has been working this entire 20 minutes. So miracles do happen.
Yes. Some things do have higher reliability.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks, Majan.
We'll have
to track down some other interesting papers here because this is something to bite into when we don't have a handful of questions to deal with.
Yes, exactly. Please share, anybody, that if you have similar kind of topics, please share them with us.
Yeah, that'd be appreciated. All right, thanks, Michonne. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Fred.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.